Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, January 24, 2017. I am Jason Powell. Coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of the go-home edition of WWE Raw heading into the Royal Rumble. WWE Raw took place in Cleveland, Ohio at Quicken Loans Arena on Monday, and it was a very good show, as far at least compared to recent WWE Raw. It just has kind of been a drag, but I think the last 2 weeks they've delivered some really good hype here for the Royal Rumble. Hopefully they're kind of pulling out of their slump. They're making better use of the full 3 hours. I can't really point to any filler that took place on the show tonight. I thought they did a nice job of really everything that took place serving some purpose toward the Royal Rumble. And it's been refreshing to watch. I don't know if there's something they're going to be able to keep up on a weekly basis coming out of the Rumble, but hopefully they can keep this up as we are in WrestleMania season, if nothing else. We ended up with some big appearances on the show. We knew Goldberg was there. They had advertised Brock Lesnar on the arena website, so we suspected he was there. They never bothered to tell us Brock Lesnar was there, which is puzzling because, Goldberg's appeared on the show lately, and it's cool that he's there, but, I think you would get more impact if you told your viewers that you were going to have Brock and Goldberg in the same ring for the first time since Survivor Series, which is the way they framed it on the arena website, but never advertised it that way. And then even stranger is that they had Undertaker show up at the end. I don't have a problem with a surprise, but I when you know you have Taker, why not tell people you're going to get the first Goldberg and Lesnar confrontation since Survivor Series and then shock them with Undertaker? But it was still a nice 1-2 punch. I'm not quite sure of the logic there of not advertising Brock in advance, but it was to have two surprises like that was certainly a cool way to close the show, and it was a big stare down between the three. And I even did get an update from a .NET reader who was at the show named Brian Prato. Hope I'm not butchering his last name, but I asked him what happened. He said nothing. Brock left, Goldberg left, he stayed at ringside for a few minutes and then walked away. Taker did his kneel down, and he even noted that the poor guy had trouble getting up from that. That's not a good sign. I'm sure there'll be video somewhere on YouTube, and I'll check that out if I can find it to kind of get a feel for what Ryan is referring to as far as Taker getting up from that. But he said that Taker just went up to the ramp and did the fist sign, and that was the end of the show as far as for the live crowd, too. So they did not have any dark matches on the show. I thought it was a great way to close off Raw, and just really good focused hype for the Royal Rumble pay-per-view. Let's work our way through this show now from the beginning. Things opened up with a recap of Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, and Roman Reigns from the week before, with Owens powerbombing Reigns through the broadcast table at the end of the show. Michael Cole, Corey Graves, Byron Saxton were on commentary, and Roman Reigns made his entrance. They've been having him open the show quite a bit. As usual, more boos than cheers, and I think WWE, maybe they put him on early so it's kind of a they can feel right, because as the first guy of the show, he's going to get a reaction. And I've kind of said that, they like to say he's like John Cena, and people just don't get it. As long as he's getting a reaction, it's great. Well, when you put him on at the beginning of the show, you're going to get a reaction. When you put him on at other points during the show, in some markets we've seen, there's some cheers, there's some boos, but it's not completely passionate from all the fans in the building. There's a lot more fans that just kind of sit on their hands at some points. Not every city's the same, but certainly when he opens the show, you're naturally going to get pretty much everyone reacting in some way. And this was a rare case of Roman Reigns not being interrupted and then just not saying anything and letting everyone else do the talking. He was interrupted, but he had a back and forth with Owens and Jericho. He just talked about the shark cage, which was in the middle of the ring at this point, talked about there being over 40,000 people going nuts at the Alamo Dome, getting his one-on-one match against Owens because Jericho would be in the cage, and he said that means he's going to hold the Universal Championship over his head, baby. All right. Well, then Owens came out, and along with Jericho, and they headed to the stage, and Owens was bragging about his powerbomb on Reigns, talking about all the people that Roman did that to over the years, putting them through a broadcast table. But he said, how many people can say they single-handedly, on their own, powerbombed Roman Reigns through that announce table? And he said, the answer is that I am the one. Reigns said that Owens would be the one who gets whipped in front of the world and his friends, and then Jericho asked if he thinks he's Nostradamus, and he said that he had a prediction for him. You're a stupid idiot. And then he did concede that was more of a statement than a prediction. This all led to to the idea of Reigns getting a U.S. Championship match, because Jericho was grumbling about being in the shark cage and said there was nothing stopping him from knocking Roman's teeth down his throat. And that's when Reigns asked, "Is that Jericho just giving me my rematch for the U.S. Championship?" I really don't understand how he came to that conclusion. Jericho mouthed no, and then Reigns played to the crowd. Fans wanted to see this, and then Owens kind of laughed at the idea at first, but then said, "You've got it." And Jericho was not pleased by this. He didn't want to face Reigns, but he said, "You're Chris Jericho. You'll beat him." And then he said he had a psychic vision that Reigns would be the person locked inside the shark cage. And then Jericho was continuing to protest off mic. And Reigns said he had a feeling, too. He's going to win his U.S. championship in Cleveland and then take the Universal title in Rumble. And he said he would be something that Owens never will be. The guy. This whole the guy thing is really lame. Who says that? I'm going to be the guy. Lame. But overall, a good segment that set up the U.S. title match and certainly set up, delivered some hype for the Royal Rumble Universal Championship match. Then after a commercial break, we did get a good lengthy ad for the NXT TakeOver San Antonio show that's coming up on Saturday. You can join me for live coverage of that. Normally, Zach Zimmerman covers the show, NXT shows, but he will actually be at the Beyond Wrestling Independent show that evening, so I will be filling in. And as a matter of fact, before we move on, I should tell you, hey, ProWrestling.net Live, it returns on Sunday, Royal Rumble Sunday edition at 2 Central, 3 Eastern time. We will be live on the air at blogtalkradio.com/ProWrestlingDOTNET, taking your phone calls. I will fill you in on the hosting details. We'll also be back on Monday and Tuesday next week as well, taking your phone calls on the air. I can tell you this much, Will Pruitt will be joining me on Monday's show. We'll be going an hour later for the Monday and Tuesday shows, but on Sunday, 2 Central, 3 Eastern time. So be sure to join us on Royal Rumble Sunday. With that said, the first match of the evening was Luke Gallows defeating Cesaro in 8:45. They both had their respective tag partners with. Anderson ended up being chased away by Sheamus at one point. He returned when Cesaro had the sharpshooter applied on Gallows, and he ended up hitting Sheamus from behind. Cesaro gives up the sharpshooter, even though Gallows was tapping, but then Gallows ended up hitting him with the boot and performing another move and beating him. So Gallows goes over. We also found out that on this show that we would be getting a tag title match on Sunday, so it looks like Sheamus and Cesaro are doing double duty because they are also advertised for the Royal Rumble match, but they will be defending the tag titles in a match with two referees. What could possibly go wrong in the kickoff show match? I don't know if they'll have more than one. It is a two-hour kickoff show. I hope they'll have more than one match. And by the way, they're also telling us, in addition to Jerry Lawler, Shawn Michaels will be on the kickoff show. They played that up quite a bit. From there, we went to Mick Foley on the phone with Stephanie McMahon. Boy, WWE, somebody, I mean, they're usually like, I mean, they're the leaders of production in their industry. And for some reason, they thought it'd be a great idea to have Stephanie check in through speakerphone. And this was horrible. I mean, I have poor hearing in one ear, so I was really struggling to hear her. Fortunately, whoever was doing, however the closed captioning works, they managed to pick up what she was saying. Man, thank God for that, because I had no idea. But the idea was that Sami Zayn came in the room and had to talk to Foley, and he wanted a spot in the Rumble match. Why he waited until 6 days before to ask, I will never know. But Foley was ready to give it to him, but that's when Stephanie interrupted and said, "You got to earn that." I don't know what he did to earn it last year when they had him in the Rumble match, but he had to earn it. He had to defeat Seth Rollins to earn that spot in the match. And Foley picked up the phone, said he didn't agree with the decision, but he would let Seth Rollins know. They went to a commercial break. Then we had the broadcast team. They did a lot of talking on this show, talking about various things for the Rumble and plugging the network and all sorts of things. Then they had Graves set up his interview with Bayley, and it was a sit-down interview, and this went really well. He asked her, how do you describe your WWE experience so far? And she said, wow. She talked about how it gives her goosebumps, and Charlotte uses her lifelong fandom against her, but she said that's a question. Or Graves, I'm sorry, asked why she used that against her, and she said that's a question for Charlotte. She said she got there because of it, and it looked like she was getting a little choked up as she talked about her dad and brother getting to watch her have a title match after attending so many shows with them over the years. She even said she hugs fans because she knows what it's like to be on the other side of the barricade. And she said that fans make her feel like she can do anything. And she ended up saying that she would walk out as the Raw Women's Champion. really good stuff here. I don't know what's happened, but they've kind of turned the corner here with Bayley over the last couple of weeks. I liked what they did last week with Bayley. I've been very critical of WWE, as regular listeners know, in that they didn't do enough to really explain her story, explain her character to the fans who don't watch NXT. If you've been watching NXT, yeah, it makes sense, but that she has a little bit more confidence now and all of that. You've seen that progression, but there really wasn't a good explanation of the character for the fans who weren't watching NXT all the time, didn't see her story play out. Maybe they heard about it, maybe they didn't, but WWE the last 2 weeks has really played up this fangirl part of her and made her feel like she is one of the fans, that she's the same as them and just grew up and went on to become a champion, or at least fighting for a championship. And so they're doing a great job with this. It's long overdue, but I really do believe they've done more for this character over the last 2 weeks than they did previously in the entire run she's had on the main roster. They went backstage where Mick Foley approached Seth Rollins in the locker room and relayed Stephanie's ruling about Rollins facing Zayn. And Seth did question, why Sammy? We just teamed together last week. And Foley explained she wants to play up the idea of friend versus friend and every man for himself. And he seemed to accept that. And then Foley had to inform him that if Zayn won, he wouldn't just get a spot in the Rumble. He would get Seth's spot in the Rumble. Rollins was not happy about this. He said he would beat Zayn, win the Rumble and the title at WrestleMania so he could throw it in the faces of Stephanie and her coward husband. So they went to a commercial. And I like this. It was a nice hook for the match. I was a little surprised that they went to the match right coming out of the break. I think it's something they could have stretched this out and gotten a little more out of this. I felt like the one thing missing was Sammy approaching Seth Rollins and kind of explaining that, hey, when I asked for the match, I didn't know it was going to be your spot. And almost some, you could have played it either way, with Seth being a little bit frustrated by him or just frustrated by the situation and blowing him off, or being a little more understanding of the circumstances, however he wanted to play it. I thought that was kind of missing. But it still, it really, the stipulation gave this match a nice hook. And it was Sami Zayn defeating Seth Rollins in 16:05 to earn Seth's spot in the Royal Rumble match. So Seth Rollins out of the Royal Rumble, Sami Zayn is in. And this was a good match, and the fans were really into both guys and their entrances, but they didn't choose sides. They just kind of sat back and watched the match and reacted to high spots because they like both guys. They really didn't have a reason to cheer for one over the other. And they just basically, it seemed like in most cases, decided not to choose. Late in the match, Rollins had performed a pedigree on the ring apron, and he rolled Sammy's back in the middle of the ring, and that's when Triple H's music played, and the fans go pretty crazy for this. And then Rollins shrugged off the cover and instead decided to wait for Triple H like a dope. But when Hunter didn't come out, Rollins then did turn his attention back to Zayn. Maybe 1 second fewer, just 1 second less of Rollins kind of waiting before he figured out, like, this guy's not coming out. Would have been nice. But anyway, he turns around. At least he figured it out. He turned around, but into an inside cradle, and was pinned. And so Sami Zayn is now in the Royal Rumble match, and we'll see what they do with Seth Rollins on Sunday. Then afterwards, Rollins was seething as he thought about what happened, and Zayn celebrated his win on the floor. Rollins was huffing and puffing and stormed up the ramp and headed backstage. And then Graves was even questioning whether Hunter was waiting for Rollins backstage. We never saw Hunter. Then the broadcast team hyped Jericho and Reigns for the U.S. Championship and Goldberg's appearance for later in the show, and then all sorts of additional hype for the network and all that other stuff I mentioned earlier. They did announce Neville against Cedric Alexander for 205 Live. Beware of a Alicia Fox finish. More on that later. Backstage, Rollins was pissed. He even knocked a phone out of a guy's hand. Not exactly the most baby-faced thing to do. But he was searching for Hunter. Foley approached him, and we got yelling Foley. Mick Foley yelled that he was just saying he didn't know. I said he wasn't saying it was Stephanie who did this, but she or someone in production seemed to do it. And Foley said he was going to get to the bottom of it. Okay, I think we all knew that, this was a Stephanie or Hunter thing. I guess we're probably back to Stephanie playing dumb on this. And I didn't know even, please don't, no one cares what Stephanie did or didn't know. It was really flat the last time they did this forever. And it just dragged on too long. And I don't think anyone really cares whether Stephanie knew or didn't know when Hunter cost Rollins the championship. I hope they don't go back to that. Then we found out that the Cruiserweight Jobber team is back in full force. Did anyone have any doubt when they showed Ari Daivari, Tony Nese, and Drew Gulak waiting in the ring for three opponents? Didn't matter. I mean, honestly, it could have been James Ellsworth and two guys who've never wrestled on Raw, and I just would have assumed that Daivari, Nese, and Gulak were going to lose. And lose they did to Mustafa Ali, TJ Perkins, and Jack Gallagher in 4 minutes. It was Mustafa Ali being spotlighted. He was given a video package, and then he ended up hitting a reverse 450 on Gulak for the win. Austin Aries did see it on commentary again, and he did point out that he doesn't trust a man who doesn't wear knee pads. And, well, Drew Gulak doesn't wear knee pads. And it is kind of creepy and weird, I gotta say. Once it's pointed out, it's like, yeah, that's part of the problem. All right, it's not a big part of the problem. It's a part of the problem with Gulak, but it is part of the problem for me. I know, petty, silly. New Day was shown clowning around backstage, and they went to a commercial break. When they came back, New Day made their entrance, and they were talking about winning the Rumble and going on to main event WrestleMania to become the Universal Champion. I don't know how this would work. Apparently, they think they would get... I don't know. I'm not sure what they think they would get. Like, they'd all get a handicap match? Who knows? But before they could explain any of this, Enzo Amore and Big Cass came out and did their shtick. Big Cass made some reference to Sylvester Stallone in 1987 and the horrible, over-the-top movie. Yeah, it may be fun in kind of a silly way now, but yeah, that was a bad movie. He said he was going to go Stallone in 87 by throwing 29 bodies over the top. Big Cass was born in, like, 1986. How much time does this guy spend thinking about the 80s? And why? Or is there some writer that does a lot of the writing for him that's obsessed with the 80s? I don't know, but this guy makes way too many 80s references for a guy who was born when he was. Rusev interrupted. We found out that Big Cass was going to be in the Royal Rumble, if you couldn't tell from that line, by the way. And Rusev announced that he's in the Rumble, too. And we got a loud USA chant. Rusev was in no mood. He said, it's not about USA, it's about their stupid names. He's questioning why they both call themselves Big. And don't be surprised if this leads to one of them being forced to change their name and drop the Big. I seriously, it's WWE. Nothing would shock me. But Rusev did have a great line here. He said the idea, you know, they can see they're Big. It's as silly as him putting Handsome in front of his own name, you know, implying that everyone knows he's handsome. And then this is when he announced that he's in the Rumble. Then Titus O'Neil came out. New Day didn't want to deal with him, but it led to him announcing an 8-man tag, and I'm like, 8-man, all right. And it wasn't so much the numbers that, you know, they only had 3 on their side. It was like, oh God, good. I thought we were about to get some. I honestly was waiting for the Shining Stars to come out to make this a 10-man tag match. Instead, they went 8. The crowd had some fun with the idea of Lana being one on the heel team and actually wrestling, but instead, it was Braun Strowman. And they went to a commercial break. After the break, the team of Strowman, Titus, Jinder, and Rusev beat New Day, Enzo, and Big Cass in 4:35. And when I say New Day, it was actually Kofi Kingston and Big E. Xavier Woods has a great job. Unless he hates playing the trombone, then it's a bitch of a job. But he does a lot of standing around at ringside while watching his tag partners work, and this was no exception. And so Strowman gets the win, as you would expect. He puts away Enzo Amore, who did get a little, you know, mini hope spot before he was put away. I actually thought we'd see more destruction from Strowman. I thought they might save Big Cass somehow, but I did think that Strowman was going to be roughing up lots of New Day members and maybe even some of his own teammates here, just to give him one final big push going into the Rumble. Seeing him beat up Enzo just didn't seem all that impressive, you know, considering the things we've seen him do before. But then after the match, Big Show's music played, and he came out wearing a singlet. He's got, American colors on the side now. He is really trimmed down. I mean, there's been... I know he's talked publicly about the amount of weight he's lost. He looks as thin as he did, if not thinner than he did, in WCW. I mean, I guess I'd have to see, like, side-by-side photos. And either way, I would just say I'm right, period. But just first glance, I'm like, wow, this is as thin as this guy as I remember him being. He looked good. And he had a little stare down with Braun Strowman. And Strowman kind of circled back around, and the fans figured out, okay, now he has his back to the entrance. He's going to be leaving. And they were right. You could hear some fans booing once they figured out that he was about to leave. And it took a few seconds before he actually did. But yeah, it was pretty obvious that they weren't going to give us this. So just a stare down, an extra teaser for the Rumble. Again, my only real criticism here is I did feel like they could have done more with Braun Strowman on this show. You have all those guys out there. Let them beat some people up. That's what people like about Braun Strowman. I'm not saying you want to make him run the risk of turning him babyface, but you want that carnage going into the Rumble with him being considered one of the heavy hitters in this thing. We got the broadcast team hyping all sorts of things. They went to a commercial break, and when they came back, the Shark Cage was above the ring, and entrances for the U.S. title match took place. And since we're nearly to the third hour, I do want to stop there and tell you that, hey, normally, .NET members hear this show on Monday nights. And so if you're somebody who if you're on the all-access side and you're like, hey, I kind of like this. Sometimes we don't always get your full-length audio reviews, obviously, but it's kind of nice being able to wake up and have that audio file ready to download first thing in the morning. Maybe you're hearing this on the ride to work and normally you don't get that opportunity. Know that it really is. I mean, it's rare that I'll record on a Tuesday. If I do, it ends up usually being an all-access audio. So most Monday nights after Raw, I am recording this for .NET members, the full-length audio review of Raw. So each and every week, that is available to the members, the long-form audio review, whether, again, most weeks, late Monday night, rare exceptions of a Tuesday morning that the show comes out. But if you're digging this, know that it is available as are audio reviews of the SmackDown show, the WWE Cruiserweight show, the 205 Live, NXT with Zach Zimmerman's weekly audio reviews, the Ring of Honor television reviews. It's kind of been a collection of hosts. At one point, it was Darren Gutteridge, then it was Hayden Gleed. Hayden's off for a little bit, so I am filling in on that show now. The TNA Impact Wrestling show, I'm doing the reviews of that most weeks. John Moore does fill in from time to time as well. And then all the major pay-per-view events, including coming up this weekend, I will have an audio review of the NXT TakeOver event, and then also we'll have an audio review of the WWE Royal Rumble show, still sorting out the details on who my co-host will be for that event, simply because Jake Barnett, who normally does all of the WWE audio reviews with me on the, for the pay-per-view events, is actually going to be at the Rumble. So I believe the plan is now for Zach Zimmerman to join me on Sunday night. So look for that if you are on the member side of things. If you were interested in membership, it is an ad-free version of ProWrestling.net. You get all these audio perks plus the ad-free version of the site. All you have to do is visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. Once you are there, you'll see three different pricing options. $7.50 gets you in the door for 1 month. If you want to save yourself some money, there is a six-month and an annual option. And as I like to point out, that annual option brings the price down to an average of $5.50 per month. So you're saving $2 a month just by going annual. If you have any questions on any of that, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet or email me at dotnetjason@gmail.com. See, I told you guys, somebody pointed that out to me. One of the members did, and I'm going to run into the ground. It's going to be annoying, but you're going to remember, dotnetjason@gmail.com. Now back to the show. Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns, U.S. Championship match. They had Kevin Owens sit in on commentary, and I'm thinking, all right, if he's so sure that Jericho is going to win, I mean, are they so delusional now that I just assume when he said that you're going to win, it was because they had some devious plan that he hadn't filled Jericho in on just yet. It was kind of his plan. Well, apparently his plan was to sit in on color commentary, and I know he ended up running in for the DQ, but I don't know. Is he really going to make it to the ring in 4 seconds? Let's say Reigns hits a Superman punch. It's just kind of silly when you think about it, but it was still entertaining. Kevin Owens is always a good time on commentary, and he did have some good lines here. At one point, he was talking about Reigns they botched a spot. It looked like some confusion. Jericho charging, Reigns kind of grabbing his leg, and then there was kind of an awkward roll-up attempt by Jericho. And then Jericho just rolled him over and started punching him in the face. And Owen says, that always works. Jericho, late in the match, went for a code breaker. Reigns caught him, dropped him in the corner, and then followed up with a sit-up powerbomb for a two count. In the end, he ends up going for a spear. Jericho leapfrogs him, but Reigns catches him with a Superman punch on the rebound, and then that's when Owens ran in and attacked Reigns for the DQ. So Reigns ends up winning by DQ, and then afterward, Owens was the one who called for the shark cage to be lowered. They did get Reigns inside of it, but they fiddled around at the lock long enough that he was able to grab first Owens from inside the cage and pull him into the cage head first, and then he did the same to Jericho, and he ended up getting Owens inside the shark cage and then having it raised, and Jericho ended up like trying to hold Owen's hand to kind of keep the cage down. When that didn't work, he held onto the bottom of the cage that was being raised up. And it was a cool moment because as it's being raised, Jericho's going up with it. Reigns hits him with a Superman punch, and then he ended up spearing Jericho. So it was just kind of a cool moment with Jericho being, you know, hit from while he was hanging from the cage. The only thing, I know, this was good. This delivered some good final hype for the Universal Championship match in the Shark Cage. Not as good as Jericho's week one, and I'm really surprised they didn't go back to him showing great fear of the Shark Cage. The idea, you know, they played it up so well that first week they announced the Shark Cage gimmick. Jericho just deathly afraid of heights, and yeah, it's ridiculous because we've seen him compete in all these ladder matches and things like that, but it's still good fun. And Jericho was so effective at it, I thought, okay, they're going to pull back on that. You don't want to just have him do this for 6 weeks because there's a big gap. But they'll get back to him showing fear of this whole Shark Cage gimmick. And I'm guessing he will, of course, on Sunday. But I thought for the go-home show, they would get back to that. And Jericho would really put that over. But he didn't. You know, it was Owens who was the one going up in it. And I thought it might have been a nice touch to actually have Jericho go up in it. Maybe they feel like saving that for the pay-per-view. The image of Jericho in it is worth doing. But it still worked out well. But I just think that I was disappointed we didn't get that that Jericho overreaction to being placed inside the Shark Cage and really putting the Shark Cage over as something special, too. Because Jericho was so afraid of heights and being inside this damn cage. But I guess they've kind of settled into sexy pinata mode instead. I thought the segment was over when they went to a commercial break. But when they came back, the cage was being lowered and Jericho unlocked it so that Owens could get out. Then they kind of comedically took turns slamming the door. Like, Owens was pissed and he slams the door. Then Jericho, you could tell, is like, I'm going to slam the door because he slammed the door. So they did that a couple of times, and then Charlie Caruso informed them that Mick Foley had told her that the Shark Cage match is now a no DQ match. Owens had a bloody lip, maybe from being pulled into the cage, I'm not quite sure, but he spoke about how unfair the match and the stipulations are, and then he slammed the cage door again, and once again, Chris Jericho slammed it too. And good fire from Owens during the promo. Obviously, the Shark Cage gimmick, when it's been used, it's a heel up there. The heel ends up dropping a foreign object in there. So yeah, this can work to the advantage of the heels, but there's nothing saying that, you know, they could easily, I mean, this can be played off as, yeah, they didn't realize this at first. You know, it was part of it fell into their lap sort of thing. Because if you have Owen sell this by going, oh, good, well, then I think everyone watching is be like, oh, great, they've got some plan to cheat. And, I mean, yeah, I think most people are assuming they're going to. But it doesn't mean it's going to work. You know, there's plenty of times where they drop something from the Shark Cage and then the baby faces end up getting it. So I'm not quite sure how this one is going to play out, like a lot of things with the Royal Rumble. And I don't feel like they foreshadowed a winner here necessarily. And I think we got through Raw without them foreshadowing a Royal Rumble match winner. But more on that in a little bit. We got the Corey Graves sit-down interview with Charlotte, and this was good. You know, she talked about one of her earliest childhood memories was watching her father win the 92 Rumble, and she just talked about how her family dominates at the Rumble. She could be winning gold medals in volleyball or winning WNBA championships, but instead she's in WWE, and she said Bayley is just lucky to be there. And she just said, you know, Bayley will be punished for even thinking she's in her league, and she will continue to be the queen of pay-per-view while Bayley will still just be a fan. So, I mean, it's the usual good mic work from Charlotte. Like, if this was the first strong promo from Charlotte, this would have stood out in a big way because it was really good, but we're just so used to hearing really good mic work from her. Where Bayley, they really established a character well. The Charlotte character is pretty well-defined. And so, I mean, but it was, I felt like both of these promo segments, these sit-down interviews, very effective in setting up that match. I'm looking forward to that match now more than I was because of the way the match was featured in the sit-down match, in the sit-down interviews. Then they showed Nia Jax walking backstage, and Cole said she would be in action after the break. And sure enough, she was. She destroyed Ray Lynn in 30 seconds. I think Lynn is an OVW wrestler. I can't say I'm all that familiar with her, but I like to kind of look these people up when if I don't recognize them, and that name popped right up. It's just Lynn with one N. That was the only mistake I made, was assuming it was two N's. But yeah, she was listed as being an OVW wrestler. I don't know if it's a dated listing or not, but Nia destroyed her. Lynn did show a little fear before the match. They also showed us footage of the attack on Sasha Banks by Nia last week. And then after the match, she took the mic from, I assume, Charlie Caruso. I was looking at the laptop, and when I looked up, she'd already taken the mic. She said that they should do a 30 for 30 on the downfall of Sasha Banks. Well, Sasha's music played. She comes limping out on one crutch. She gets to ringside. She's on the floor. Nia's in the ring. She hits her in the knee with the crutch from the floor and then enters the ring and starts bashing her with the crutch repeatedly. And Cole really good at pointing out that Jax was still standing. She didn't fall down from those crutch shots. Jax charged at Banks, who then ducked, and Nia ended up tumbling through the ropes to the floor. And then Sasha ended up jumping onto her with the double knee press and ended up standing tall at the end of this segment. In case I forget, they did announce later on in the show that Sasha Banks and Nia Jax is also official for the Royal Rumble show. I didn't catch if that one is kickoff show or regular show, but I like it. I'm happy they managed to, that they ended up adding this to the show because they've done a really nice job, you know, with the Nia beatdown. Only thing I didn't like here is you have this good angle, and it needs a little time to breathe. But they don't give it that. They don't even give you replays. They just cut to... They don't give you replays of those crutch shots, nothing. They just cut to the broadcast team again, recapping the Triple H tease and everything else and hyping Goldberg. And then they even went from there to Rich Swann being shown walking backstage and Graves saying he'd be in action next. Just give us the commercial coming out of the segment. We don't always need to hear from the broadcast team members and recapping everything nonstop. It's just a... It just felt awkward, like, you're done with that segment? You're just moving right on? Crazy. Coming out of the break, the only thing they've advertised for SmackDown on this show, anyway, was Randy Orton against Luke Harper, which we knew was going to happen. You can join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown as the show airs on USA Network, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. And then after the show, I'll be by with my 205 live review, as I always am on Tuesdays at ProWrestling.net. Then Emelina is still premiering soon. Yeah, she's still premiering soon, folks. I stopped caring. Seventh match was Rich Swann beating Noam Dar in a non-title match in 5:55. Alicia Fox now comes to the ring with Noam Dar. So they weren't together last week officially. They are now. Aries was back on commentary for this, as he is for all the Cruiserweight matches. He replaces Byron Saxton. And they did have the wrestlers shake hands, which I still find corny, but they're going to do what they're going to do. Swann ended up catching Dar with that big kick to the head that he uses. There was a commercial break during this match, by the way, but he caught him with that kick and got the win. And then after the match, he took the match took the mic and called out Neville. And he said that he thinks he's a jester, not a king. Neville's music played. He headed to the ring and ducked through the ropes and then backed off to the floor. But Swann ended up diving on to Neville and throwing some punches at him before rolling back inside the ring. Actually, he rolled Neville back inside the ring, but Neville then fled as Swann was getting back in. So just a nice little final push for the Neville and Rich Swann match. I tell you, it's a shame, though, that they were unable to air the great video feature that they did on these guys. They had just a great video package that aired. I'm sure you'll catch it if you watch the kickoff show. It'll be on there. But it's a shame. I mean, that made me really excited about this match, just kind of looking at the history between these guys. I had comments from both guys. Really well done. It aired on 205 Live last week, and it's a shame it never ended up airing on Raw. They went backstage where Charlie Caruso interviewed Cedric Alexander about facing Neville, and he said that with all the Fox and Dar stuff behind him, he can finally focus on being Cruiserweight champion. Well, there's Alicia's cue. She comes screaming in the room, and Dar's with her. And Dar said that he wanted to make sure there was no hard feelings about them, between them, over him stealing Cedric's girlfriend. Alexander said there were no hard feelings over Fox, but he still attacked him last week. So he ended up shoving Dar, who fell on the ground and was playing up being injured while Alicia consoled him. So he's not done with these two just yet. And I was wondering if they would add a match between them to the pay-per-view, but it didn't seem like it here. The way this ended, you would think they would have put a little more heat on Dar if they were going to. I'm looking forward to seeing these guys work more together. This feud has been really weird at times, but It's kind of a train wreck. You can't really take your eyes off it. I'm happy that Alicia's now with Dar and Cedric is his own man. But I do look forward to more from these two. They work well together in the ring as well. Then we, oh, and Corey Graves said that some girls make you want to delete your ex-girlfriends type thing, I think it was the idea. They want to make you delete your social media accounts. Fox is the type who makes you want to leave town and change careers. Good line. And then that's when they did officially announce Banks and Nia Jax for the Rumble. Goldberg's music hit, and they did the full bit with him walking through the backstage area. He had a cut on top of his head, and I'm thinking, well, hey, as a fellow bald guy, I've shaved, I've suffered a little, nick or even a gouge shaving the head. Every once in a while, that razor just hits you the wrong way, whatever. Well, Corey Graves pointed out, I kind of wish they just would have let me think that because I came away thinking, wow, Goldberg's a real meathead. Graves points out that Goldberg headbutts the door on his way to the ring each and every time. Like, why? I know he's getting himself pumped up. Surely there's better ways than ramming your head. Remember this one if Goldberg ever like joins a concussion lawsuit. He slams his head into the door on his way to the ring before every time he leaves the locker room. I bet this went over better in football when he, had a helmet. Anyhow, Goldberg gets out there, crowd really into him, giving him the big reaction, and he says, "So here we go." And then the fans chanted his name, and he said, "Okay, let's go for it again." Then he got kind of tongue-tied as he talked about a path to WWE. And then he told the fans they made him screw up, and he said, "Let's go for a third time." And then he said the WWE Universal Championship runs through the Royal Rumble match. I think he meant the path. Maybe I missed a word there, but he said there'd be 29 other entrants in the Rumble, and who want the same thing, an opportunity at Kevin Owens or Roman Reigns. I was actually hoping he was going to say an opportunity against Kevin Owens or AJ Styles, because that's one thing they have yet to clarify. How does this work? Who gets the shot? I shouldn't, and maybe they have on the WWE website in some preview. I shouldn't have to go there. If you're watching Raw and SmackDown every week, you should know something as big as what happens if so-and-so wins the Rumble. Can they challenge for either title? If they're a Raw wrestler and they win the SmackDown title, do they bring the SmackDown title to Raw, or do they go to SmackDown with it? These are simple things that WWE could clear up, and they've been very lazy about. But I want to stay positive because this was a good show. Going to be tough because Goldberg was pretty brutal on the mic, but at any rate, his forehead was bleeding at this point. It started off just kind of looked like I said, looked like a gouge or a nick on top of his head, and it wasn't a big one, but it started trickling blood down his face. And he just said he would, if even if he had to spear and jackhammer 29 other guys, that's what he would do. And then he started to say all 29 opponents were next, but he was interrupted by Paul Heyman, who wanted to come out and address Goldberg's observations. Heyman did a better. This is one thing where WWE kind of dropped the ball. Even though it's easy for fans to kind of daydream about the various scenarios when they see the wrestlers advertise for this, it feels like WWE should have been playing this up more. Heyman seems to be the guy who got it. When you start playing up some of the scenarios, he mentioned Goldberg in the ring with Randy Orton at the Rumble, or Goldberg and Braun Strowman, or one of the many surprise entrants that they have each year, or even Undertaker. So he's doing a good job of kind of reminding people that, yeah, it's not just about Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. And I think that's important to do across the board, especially when you have so much star power in here, to start reminding people of, hey, it's not just about the guy this person's feuding with. Think about the dream, the potential dream matchups you could see. And yeah, it's not a full-on match. It's still, they're going to be in the same ring together. You might see Brock Lesnar and fill in the opponent, Braun Strowman. You might, you just run through that list a little more often. They've teased it with different segments, well, but they haven't, with all the babbling we've heard from these broadcast team members, you'd think they would be a little more creative with some of that than they have been. But Heyman said that depending on the luck of the draw, fans might see the scenario of Goldberg against Brock Lesnar. And he did at one point emphasize that Goldberg would be beaten by Lesnar. I think that actually that was coming up next because Brock Lesnar's music hit. And Cole says, "Oh my goodness, is he here?" And you're wondering, like, all right, is it another tease? Well, unless you read the arena website, are you aware of that? But I'm sure there were some fans out there going, "Oh God, it's another Heyman trick." Well, out comes Brock for real this time. Is that why they did it? Do they want it, next time they tease it, they want people to fall for it? Well, he wasn't advertised at one time. Again, it just seems odd to me that you wouldn't try to, like, my God, Brock Lesnar, Goldberg in the same ring. We have seen them separately since the Survivor Series. We have not seen them together. What might happen on Raw? Just seems so obvious to me that they didn't do that. Maybe they felt like Royal Rumble go-home show and advertising Goldberg was enough. They must have. But I just would have done it slightly different. So Brock comes out, and that's when Heyman tells him, "Behold, Mr. Goldberg, the object, the instrument of your demise." And he said Goldberg would be beaten, victimized, emasculated, blah, 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 blah. Starts running through this long list of things in the Rumble match. And he said, once Goldberg is conquered, then and only then, Lesnar would throw him over the top rope and eliminate him. And when I heard that line, it did make me, I got to, this is what popped into my head, and there's a lot of weird things that pop into my head, but this was one of them. It basically did make me think, all right, is the idea going to be that Brock Lesnar does rough up Bill Goldberg pretty good? Maybe it's because Goldberg was in the match longer, maybe not. Maybe it's just Lesnar's kind of looking strong against Goldberg. You know, things are fairly even as far as how long they've been in the match together and all that. It's just, you know, Brock is getting the better to look a little stronger coming out of his destruction in Survivor Series, where he was beaten in 90 seconds, roughly. But then instead of eliminating him, he gets cocky, and Bill Goldberg is able to eliminate him. So, look, for, you know, I'm not saying it's definitely going to happen, but that's what made me think of this. So, if it does happen, remember this moment, because I just wonder if they were getting a little cute with that line. Or, you know, it's just one of those many things that pop into my head that I should just ignore. But Goldberg ended up cutting off Heyman's big Brock Lesnar line. He said, "Are you going to be a man and come down here, boy? Or are you going to sit up there like a dumbass?" Well, Lesnar, he doesn't want to be called a dumbass, so he heads to the ring, does his usual lap around it, which I just love. It works so well for Brock Lesnar. And I just, I think Cole likes to see stalking his prey, that sort of thing. It's just, you know, taking that lap around there, it's so intense, and you're just kind of waiting for that moment, and it's a great visual. The fans chanted for Goldberg. Lesnar enters the ring as Cole's playing up that they were in the ring for the first time since Survivor Series, and then the gong sounds, and the lights go out. When the lights turn back on, Undertaker was in the ring with both men. You have Undertaker front and center, and he took a long look at both guys, and the fans were chanting holy shit at this point. And then Taker's music played as the three men stood in the ring to close the show. So really cool final moments there of the show. Even though I would have gotten what I could out of advertising both guys, this went great. You know, you had Brock Lesnar in there with Goldberg. You had the unexpected, you know, even if you were expecting that, I don't think too many people were expecting Undertaker to pop up. And you have three big stars right there in the final segment, each guy going to be in the Royal Rumble match. So it was a really good closing segment to what I consider to be a strong go-home edition of Raw heading into the Rumble. No real wasted segments on this show. You know, they did a good job of gearing everything toward the Rumble. And whether it was just people entering the match, or, you know, even the eight-man tag. You found out a couple people who were going to be entering. You saw Braun Strowman get a win. You saw Big Show come out. Big Show's in the Rumble. You know, just everything on this show pointed to the Rumble. And so whether you're thrilled with every match on the Rumble card or the Rumble itself, if you're just unhappy with it, well, hey, that's the card. And they did their job effectively when it came to building up the card for Sunday and building up the Rumble match for Sunday. And I, for one, am really looking forward to it. I think, as I mentioned earlier, I don't feel like they foreshadowed anything beyond maybe that scenario I laid out there, and that may just be me reading too much into one line. It really could be, but I didn't, you know, that doesn't mean it's the end of the Rumble. It just could be at any point in the Rumble. Both guys could eliminate a bunch of guys, and they could be in there 9 and 10, clear the ring, and they do their thing, and that's what happens, and Goldberg eliminates him somehow. But we'll be getting into all of this throughout the week, obviously. In fact, Jake Barnett and I on Thursday, I believe, got together, and we ran through the entrance at the time in the Rumble and kind of gave a 0 to 10 score on each guy, what we thought their chances were there were a number of guys who were 0 to 2, but then we had our list of strong favorites, and Taker was one of them, Strowman was one of them, and they've added some guys since then, so I look forward to discussing the Royal Rumble as we get closer in audio form this week, certainly. And, of course, on Sunday afternoon with ProWrestling.net Live. I want to hear what you guys think about the big show on Royal Rumble Sunday. And of course, if you have any desire to talk about the NXT TakeOver show that will have taken place by then, we can certainly talk about that too. Again, 2 Central, 3 Eastern time on Sunday afternoon, Royal Rumble Sunday. We will be taking your calls at ProWrestling.net Live. Listen live at blogtalkradio.com/ProWrestlingDOTNET. And don't worry if you forget, I will have reminders up on the main page along with the call-in information and all of that good stuff. But definitely looking forward to getting back in the groove as far as doing some live audio is concerned, with shows on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And hell, I think it's even my week to appear on the live cast. I think it will be by then. I could be mistaken, but I think I'll be on with Wade Keller on Wednesday. So it looks like it'll be 4 days in a row of live audio for me. Should be a good time. I'm looking forward to it. Hope to hear from you guys. But that is going to do it for now, everybody. Don't forget, if you're interested in membership, you know the drill. Visit the main page at ProWrestling.net. And a big thanks to everybody who has helped out in some way, shape, or form in terms of spreading the word about this daily podcast. Remember, we'd love it if you would take a moment to subscribe. If you would give us a rating in iTunes, that would be wonderful. Or if you are just so kind as to hit retweet when I put the link out there on Twitter for everybody. And if you like these late night audios, remember, they're here almost every week for .NET members. We would love to have you on board, and then you would have your audio fix on Tuesday morning on that ride to work, or hell, Wednesday morning with SmackDown and 205 Live a lot of weeks as well, but almost every week for WWE Raw. You have any questions, again, hit me up on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet. Until next time, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Take care.